And this is Tom Rowe now on WGXC, sitting here with Antoine Guerlain, who is spinning the tracks. Antoine, you want to tell people what that song was?
Four-year Ocean Scenes by Oniotrix Point Never.
And here we're on the WGXC afternoon show, and I am sitting here now with Tim O'Connor and Chris Reed. And also on the phone with us is Patrick Doyle. Patrick, can you say hello?
Hello, everyone up there in Hudson Land.
And Tim and Chris, you want to say hello too, so people get used to your voice?
Okay. Yes. Great. Good to hear your voice, Patrick, from sunny Philadelphia.
Greetings, listeners, and hi, Patrick.
Is it still sunny in Philadelphia?
Is it still sunny? It just got a little bit cloudy, but it's very nice.
All right. But we're here today to talk about the Hudson Waterfront Plan, which there's a number of acronyms that go along with the Hudson Waterfront Plan. Do you guys want to start off by explaining? Well, first, you're from the South Bay Valley Alliance.
No, South Bay Task Force.
South Bay Task Force, I'm sorry. I'm mixing up two different organizations. So explain first what your organization is, and then we'll introduce the Waterfront Plan.
Well, I guess I can start. This is Chris. The South Bay Task Force is a group of citizens who are self-selected, concerned about the future of the Hudson waterfront. It kind of grew out of a task force at the Friends of Hudson, which I am president of, started in 2007. A lot of the current members come from that effort. We did extensive public comments at that particular juncture of the LWP process. And then we regrouped with new blood in 2010, in February and March, during the comment period. And it was a very intense period amongst ourselves. We tried to educate ourselves and then the public, and then come up with a host of comments. Some of them were from Friends of Hudson itself, which I wrote, from the then LWRP task force, which was collectively written, and individual letters. And now we are here to talk about the LWRP in its latest phase.
I'd like to add that we're a very moderate group of individuals, very diverse, all political parties. We all care about the ecology, but we also feel that this this LWRP, this Local Waterfront Revitalization Program, and its attendant environmental impact statement, it should be community-based. And I see it in terms of contractual law, contract law, that there should be an ascent of viewpoints, and people should come together and agree, basically.
And Patrick is on the phone. Patrick, you ran the Basilica Industria for 10 years down on the waterfront?
That's right, 10 years. And so I guess I consider myself a local in relationship to the South Bay and the waterfront. And one of the things that even preceded the South Bay Task Force and the LWRP Task Force was something called the South Bay Coalition, which was also members of that were Friends of Hudson, Scenic Hudson, and a number of other groups and individuals. The preceding that, the LWRP in its kind of its last incarnation was around 2002, and I've been a part of that. I've been reading that the entire time, and have been very connected to it. So the continuum that this task force represents actually goes back to 2002.
Maybe to pick up on something that Tim just said about collaboration, this is such a complex issue that a single brain cannot really comprehend it. I think it really involves a collaboration from multiple perspectives and disciplines and temperaments, and that's something that we have tried to do in this task force. Not that we all agree lockstep every second of the way. We have diversity and sometimes arguments amongst ourselves about what or how to emphasize this. But out of this process of distillation and engagement with these issues, I think that we can come up with a clarity that we offer to the larger community. I think that's one of the things that we want to position ourselves to be able to provide. And also, focus for the future and how we can enhance this wonderful opportunity here with the South Bay and the waterfront, according to some of the principles that I think we've already discussed, but we can elaborate.
The principles of an LWRP and the state Environmental Quality Review Act called SEQRA. We'll talk a lot about SEQRA or SEQRA review. It's actually very democratic. It follows the invention of home rule in the 1920s, the progressive movements in New York State. A common misconception is that Albany is going to bail us out somehow and fix things, but that's looking through the wrong end of the telescope. We've talked to everybody in Albany. We've talked to everybody in every agency, and they can't answer certain questions because it's up to the citizens. So it may be a waterfront program, and it's an exercise and an environmental impacts review, but it's also a great chance to revitalize democracy. It's just asking for it. So we're not a group that will interpret things for the layman. We're not interested in that. We're interested in people using their own minds and getting involved.
Well, Patrick, you want to say something?
Yes, I also think that when you look back at how things have evolved in this last kind of LWRP, which basically started in 2007, I think it was, one of the most interesting things that occurred a little bit later in the process, for me personally, was that when the task force created itself in its kind of first incarnation in this last LWRP, specifically Tim O'Connor and Meg Carlton came in and they basically said, well, wait just a minute on this restoration of the bay, which I was kind of real hot on. Man, let's tear down the berm, the old railroad bed, and let's rip out the Phragmites and let's restore it. And what's interesting to me is that is not necessarily what needs to be done or what can be done with the South Bay. Because at the same time, we've got people saying, let's get the trucks off of the Columbia and put it through the middle of the wetland, and that'll help people that are in the poorer neighborhoods and keep the trucks off. And there's all kinds of things that have come up. But the most important thing that's come up, as far as I'm concerned, is that the South Bay itself has life in it. There's very specific life in it, and it has everything to do with the well-being and the life of the Hudson River. So where does the South Bay stand in relationship to this whole discussion? And how is it represented in this latest form of the LWRP? And this is something that we have examined and talked about quite a bit in the task force, and it's something that's critical for the understanding of everyone that's a citizen that's interested in this to know about, or at least to understand, that we have got something in the South Bay that has real value, both economically, environmentally, ecologically. But what is it that we really, what do we have? And that's a question. And the question has not even been begun to be asked, and there's really nothing that has been stated in the LWRP that really takes a hard look at what the South Bay is.
All right, so I want to get back to what Christopher, you said a moment ago, that no one brain can get their head around this, because that, I think that makes me and all our listeners probably feel a little better, because we're all a little bit confused.
Yeah.
So the LWRP is a voluntary plan that the city of Hudson decided to go into a number of years ago to create a waterfront revitalization program. Is that correct?
Right, but there's a very important linkage with the state in this case in terms of they provide guidance in terms of policies that we that localities have to take into account in their deliberations.
May I? And ultimately, it's the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act that it comes down from. So all of these levels have to recognize the legitimacy of that we've done it right. Correct.
So in order to have a waterfront plan, you have to go through these other hoops with different agencies.
Well, they've set up a procedure.
Yes.
And so that's what the GIS is, the GIS?
GIS is something else, but we'll talk about the waterfront plan first.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I think that there have been wonderful, successful waterfront plans throughout the coastal areas of the state. Ours has been very problematic, I think, for a number of reasons, which we might get into. Not the least of which has been the issue of the cement plant that took up a substantial amount of civic energy for a long period of time, and we're still experiencing the residue, I think, of that confrontation. But the carrot here with the passage of an LWRP is that it opens up a lot of opportunities for funding. And I think the discipline itself, even though it's been much harsher in Hudson, I think is in, overall a very good discipline for us to go through, according to the principles that are laid out, as Tim pointed out, both at the federal and at the state level. So what we've seen in the last few months, so before the LWRP and the GIS came back to the city of Hudson, was a lot of discussion between the Department of State, which is the agency that oversees these processes on behalf of the municipalities. But it really is now the ball's in our court again.
Let me just add one thing about the LWRP in relationship to what its worth is. One of the things that's occurred with the LWRP in its draft form over the many years and years and years that it's been around is that the city has used it as leverage to get money from the state in order to do certain things on the waterfront, which has been a really good thing. The removal of the bust oil tanks, there's all kinds of different things that have occurred on the waterfront that by having a draft LWRP, there was a lot more money coming from the state because the whole point is to be in alignment with the state 44 policies. So by having a draft, even a draft LWRP, the state says, oh, okay, you're going towards supporting what the state laws are. You're developing your waterfront. We're going to give you this money, that money, this money, which a lot of money has been given to the city. The problem of all of this is that, as we know, especially in the city of Hudson, politics gets involved with everything. And politics has basically driven this thing over and over again. The thing that's going on now with this latest LWRP draft or final and the GIS is that there's been a certain kind of point of view that has driven it. And that point of view, whatever you want to call it, has not put into it a true questioning of what's going to happen to the ecology and the environment of the South Bay. This is one of the deepest flaws of the document. Does that document have to be passed, and does the way it's put together, is that the best thing for the citizens? Well, you don't have to pass it because it's voluntary, but if you do, is this document as it stands really the best document for the future of the city of Hudson? And that's really what the plan is about, the future.
Good time to make a distinction between the LWRP and the Environmental Impact Statement, which is required by SEQR, the State Environmental Quality Review.
And that's required because we're going through the LWRP process or for some other reason?
That's required of any action undertaken by, or funded or undertaken or approved by any agency, local, regional, or state. Must undergo an environmental review.
Anytime there's a new development.
No, any kind of an action at all. It could be zoning or building a parking lot or in the case of a company that wants to build a road or build a supermarket or something. That these are all, that's going to be approved by a government agency at some level. So it must undergo an environmental review.
So this is a normal thing that would go on in any planning board around the either counties.
Every planning right. board, all the time. And environment, in this case, isn't just ecology. It's also the Columbia Street and State Street and the dust and the vibration. All those things are part of the environment. And these are all different interests that should be considered by the community.
And I think you sent me an email earlier that's saying that the GEIS, the GEIS,
yes.
is more important, actually, than the LWRP, or you felt it was maybe...
Well, it's not that it's more important. No, I wouldn't use those words. I would say that there are more rules and procedures. When I said the LWRP was voluntary, you look at the state guidelines, and it's suggesting this, suggesting that, and, you know, you can always try this. And I believe that these planners that we've had actually a succession of planners, but these last planners have really gamed the system, and they figured out a way to keep the public out and have just a very few concerns. This LWRP, I see, is a delivery vehicle for certain special interests.
So it's much more political, where a SEQR or a GEIS is cut and dry. Are there Army Corps wetlands?
Be.
Are there not Army Corps wetlands?
It should be, but
right.
they gamed that too, because planners are
be
the ones who know how to game the system.
But you can have science to disprove if they game the system in the GEIS.
Well, yeah, but they don't need to look at the science. if they don't want to. And they've explained it in just such a way that they the draft GEIS, now that goes back to the State Environment and Quality Review Act, it has a review process that's systematic, and it's supposed to help you early on in the planning process. But SEACER is both a procedural and a substantive law. In addition to establishing the environmental review procedures, it's substantive because the law mandates that agencies act on the substantive information produced during the environmental review. So the South Bay Task Force actually produced information which was new. It's called newly discovered information. And they have to have addressed that type of thing. And they have to have addressed the things that they found, the things that came up in the public comments. But they tricked it tricked it entirely. Parallel to what they did with the LWRP, they used the GEIS, which is really formally, formal, and it's a law. They actually tricked that process too, and that's where they're going to get caught.
Patrick, you wanted to add?
Yeah, and I think that this is really interesting what Tim brought up, because the Department of State, although it is the one that deals with in the coastal resources the 44 policies, there's a real misnomer that's going on in the community by most of the other groups, and most certainly by the mayor, and that. Well, we beat a trail to the DOS, and the DOS this, and the DOS that. The fact is that the DOS at this time, at this juncture, is not where we go to find the answers or to give us the okay. Where we go is the SEACER review process and the citizens of the city of Hudson. The DOS basically is a non-player at this point.
That's right.
So that's a real misnomer that many of these groups are having. The fact is that Randy Daniels' speech years ago has no bearing on what is going on right this minute in the process of the LWRP.
I don't know who Randy Daniels is, and probably a lot of our listeners don't. Can you...
Randy Daniels basically was the Secretary of State at the time of the ruling of St. Lawrence to deny them their permits. And he made a very wonderful speech, a great statement about the waterfront. But as even the planners of this LWRP respond in the responses to the comments, that was only an opinion, and that is the absolute truth. His words have no law-bearing effect on what we're doing right now.
Patrick, can I suggest that the Randy Daniels discussion, that sort of material, falls in the realm of the LWRP, which is kind of a done deal. It's too late. The community can't get involved. They found a way around it. The Common Council accepted the document. As our representatives, they basically said, we'll speak for the people. Everybody was involved. So we may not like it, but it's a done deal. The Environmental Impact Review, the GEIS, that's a different story. And the citizens are the final,
arbiter.
Thank you, the final arbiter of whether it worked or not. Not the Common Council.
So you're suggesting the Common Council will approve the LWRP as it has been released, and that still can be changed, though, through the SEACER if...
Any of these things can be changed.
Because the SEACER overrules things because it's cut-and-dry science. It's supposed to be cut-and-dry science.
Well, it's not really, because this is a generic environmental impact statement. And so that's a slightly different thing. It can be more conceptual in nature. We want to know why there's such a specific project included in this generic review. That doesn't float.
And again... This is the real point. This is the real meat of all of this.
Would you tell them, Patrick, about the specific project too?
Yeah, the specific project is obviously a road through the middle of the wetland. There are also some so-called quote unquote alternatives, but those have never been looked at or studied in any kind of scoping. These are new things that have just appeared in the last couple of weeks. They've never been in the previous documents. What's interesting about all of this is that this project that's wanting to put a road to the middle of the wetland has over 30 pages dedicated to it in both the documents together. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, you are wrong. It's much more than that. It's a third of the draft GEIS. A third of 187 pages. How many pages on the ecology, Patrick?
My understanding is there's two, and that's a real stretch to say that there's two.
It's less than two.
It's less than two. In fact, they refer to the so-called restoration plan for the South Bay. And if you go to that and refer to it, you'll see it's two paragraphs. And it basically says, there'll be a plan that'll follow state guidelines in the future. So in other words, there is no plan whatsoever for the South Bay. Now, what's interesting is that the city is claiming that, well, we've got to get the land in our name before we can do a restoration project on the South Bay. Otherwise, it's owned by Holcomb, and therefore we can't do anything about it. That's a real misnomer, because the fact is that that is a Class 1 wetland. And, in fact, the actual causeway itself, what they're calling the causeway, which is actually only an old railroad bed, they're saying is not within this Class 1 wetland. Well, if you look at the map, you'll see that it most certainly is. And there's some more things to say about that, but basically they're saying, well, we're going to take out what's ever in the middle there, and that's not going to count as wetland. Well, we're questioning that. That's kind of a simplistic way to talk about it.
Yeah. All right, Patrick, while you were talking, Michael O'Hara walked into the room, so we want to introduce him to the you guys will have to share that microphone there. You want to say hello?
Hello.
And I guess I want to bring it back for a second. Like, I think we're all in agreement, probably, not just the other groups and maybe even the mayor and all kinds of other people, that the Hudson waterfront is probably the city's most important, valuable asset. Looking towards the future?
If I may, most of the local waterfront revitalization program is dedicated to the land side of things, so I don't think that people have valued the water at all. They haven't valued the waterfront properly at all.
So you wouldn't say it's an agreement. Maybe the people in this room believe that, but...
No, actually, Tim, I think what you're talking about is other communities and the way that they're... LWRPs have been structured.
Where they have,
am I correct?
Where they have valued the water more.
Understood, but yeah. I mean it's something that many of us have done, which is look at the LWRPs that have been done by other communities to gain an understanding of how these things are done, and to use them as potential models for the way that we might write up our own. The question of what asset of the city is more or less valuable, of course, depends on your point of view. Certainly, if we think about access to the recreational and transportation and just refreshment value of a park anyway, anywhere where it is, whether it's inland or at a coastline of some sort, Hudson is undersupplied with that sort of recreational opportunity compared to many other metropolitan areas. And so we've done studies about this that underline the value of these things, and certainly the waterfront will continue to be a point of recreation. The other access issue, though, is transportation, that the least expensive way to get heavy bulk materials to and from other places is by the water, and we are very lucky to have access to the river in a way that has already been designed by our ancestors to be accessible for relatively large watercraft that will become increasingly valuable to us as a community as transportation costs by other means get more expensive, trucks in particular.
Yeah, I say that I think that everyone in the South Bay Task Force supports what you just said.
So I don't know if I derailed the talk a little bit with that. I wasn't trying to go necessarily in that direction, but I was trying to lead into the work you guys have been doing about the environmental the things you've been discovering in the waters there in the South Bay. You've been discovering a number of life that was previously unknown there or endangered? Or
Nothing endangered. New York State threatened species and species of federal special concern, the herring that are in there. But I wanted to read something very quickly from the New York State Environmental Conservation Law. This is 661.2 under findings. Intertidal marsh and coastal fresh marsh, that's what we're talking about here, a tidal coastal fresh marsh, is the most biologically productive of all wetland areas. Their intertidal location also makes them among the most effective wetland zones for flood and hurricane and storm protection. And that'll bring in a discussion of the Army Corps of Engineers. We've been working with them for the last year. And finally, because of their high values and their sensitive location at the land and water interface, intertidal and coastal fresh marshes must be the most stringently protected and preserved tidal wetland zones. Even small portions of these zones are critically important resources. Consequently, only very limited types of land use and development are compatible with the values in these areas. Well, that's 661.2 in the New York State Environmental Conservation Law, and that statement brought the task force together over a year ago, and we talked about that and talked about that. And, yeah.
And you know, historically, this is, I think, a very pertinent addition to this. But in 1837, Greenport basically took its boundaries and surrounded Hudson and pushed it up against the water, against the Hudson River. The final frontier of Hudson is only in the waterfront. There is no other frontier for Hudson to deal with it. So this document that's the LWRP that's working with what's supposed to be the future of Hudson is not dealing with the wetlands and this environment that is supportive of fish, of the shad, of the herring, and all these different things. And what happens if in 50 years the actual importance of fish, of an actual fishery in the Hudson River, is maybe one of the most important things there is, because of food and well-being and all of that? The fact is that we do not have enough information to really value the South Bay right now, because of things like Tim said, of flooding, because of the fishery, because of the wildlife that's in there, and most importantly, for the cultural well-being of human beings, both from a natural point of view and also from, you know, food on the table. These are really serious issues that the task force has been looking at for the last couple of years. And where is it in the LWRP? It's not there.
And that was my point, that Michael arrived a little late. He didn't know that we had already discussed our concern that all interests involved in this thing make for a more stable document. But when I sit out in the river in my kayak and I look back and I think, where is this in the waterfront plan? It's just not there.
So maybe I'll play devil's advocate for a second here and say, you said earlier there's only 2 pages about environmental studies in the plan.
Ecological studies.
There's very little about global warming, too. I think you're talking about that 50-year thing, that if the water's level would be another foot higher or something in 50 years. So the plan maybe should take that into account. But I also don't hear much from you guys talking about the possible business side of the waterfront and how that's a jewel for the city and how it could really be a great thing for the city. Michael, you're raising your hand. You seem like you want to talk about that.
Well, I did. I mean, that was my point about the transportation issue, that shipping goods in and out of the waterfront is something many communities along the river don't have access to, and we do. I mean, just through an accident of the geography, that the train line cuts north and south a bit inland from where it does in many of the other spots along the river. So that gives us this big swath of territory on the riverside with which to use, either for the business side of things, for transportation, as well as for the recreational side that we mentioned already.
We also picked up, I think, the idea of fisheries, commercial fishing. Of course, commercial fishing in the Hudson River in our region has been decimated because of PCBs. There are certain species that, because of their life cycles, are not as susceptible to that pollutant that we can still harvest, and is being done so recreational, but it's much diminished. And the late Everett Knack, I think, was one of the great advocates for the resurgence of a fishing industry. And so we want to look at the South Bay and the North Bays with the lens of as incubators of the food chain. And that has a commercial application. I think we need to think long term about the viability not only of small farms and diversified farms, but also the fishing industry.
But the gorilla in the room is Holcomb, the landowner, and ONG, who is the long-term lessee, and their business interest down there, which we don't oppose. We're not interested in eminent domain to take their land away. We're looking for all interests, a balance of all interests.
So how would you like it that they survive? How would that they exist after this? What would you be ideal way that they exist after this?
With that they put their roads somewhere else.
So where would that be?
It would be in an alternative that was first suggested in, I believe, 2003, certainly 2004. The maps were made all through 2009 while the environmental impact statement was being made. The lead agency, see, under CEQA, there has to be a lead agency, and that happens to be the Common Council. Members of the lead agency were asking the planners, please include this specific alternative. They wouldn't do it. The draft came to them, finally, from the privacy of the planners' design room, and the Common Council looked at it, the lead agency, and they said, okay, it's good enough. That alternative was not in there. After the public comment period, when we wrote about the alternative that was still missing after all these years, the most feasible, we feel, of all the alternatives, we got promises from the lead agency, Common Council, that it would be in there in the final. It's not in there in the final. Why not?
I'd like to just call attention to the South Bay Task Force website where listeners can have an opportunity to see this. I know the pictures really go a lot further than the verbal descriptions. HudsonSouthBay.com, there's a section there on maps, and the most recent entry, and then the one that's below it by one, show visually what Tim is trying to talk about. There is a particular alternative that is still not in the current document, and we can't account for that. There's no justification given in the GEIS, Tim is showing me an address for...
Say your address again, please.
No, the address for the South Bay Task Force is HudsonSouthBay.com. I checked earlier today just to make sure. Anyway, so that the maps there for people who are curious about the alternatives that are in the plan and the alternative that still is not in the plan, they can come to their own conclusions as to whether this is, what the reason is for that omission. I'm not going to speculate on motives here, but I...
Likewise, with the diagram that's on the WGXC front page right now that you can see that yours... there's three possibilities that they've that are in the plan, and there's one that's not. And to me, I'm not a plan or anything. The one that's not looks like the logical plan. It looks like the plan that is being used by cars every day. I know I've cut through that basically that way. It's not exactly that way. I'm sure Patrick can complain about how many people cut through his property that way in the past. So why is it that fourth option that looks the most logical isn't in the plan?
I want to caution a little bit on this conversation. And the main part of it is that the so-called alternatives or the primary use of the so-called causeway, which is really an old railroad bed right-of-way, any of those routes would be subject to and should be subject to an EIS, and more importantly, they should be subject to it now, because all of them encroach into either the wetland itself proper or in the check zone. So no matter what you're going to do, even if you were going to do nothing through the bay or around it, which is also a true plan of what to do with it, is that you've got to study this and you have got to look at the environmental, ecological issues of the South Bay as it pertains to the city of Hudson in relationship to the river. And I just want to give you one example. The city solved the so-called problem 3 years ago with Von Ritter by dumping more storm sewer into the east basin of the South Bay. They did not get any permission from any agencies or anything, and they're dumping thousands and thousands of gallons of probably mixed septic also because of the overflow that takes place. Now, I know the new sewer system is there, and that's great. But the fact is that's an official policy of the city to dump storm sewer into the east basin of the South Bay. What effect does that have on this, and how does that affect any alternative route or the main route? And just one more thing, 12 acres of the L&B property, 3 acres of it is actually the roof, the rest of it is asphalt, all dumps directly into the east basin of the South Bay, which is severely restricted in its connection to the hydrology.
Well, we did a hydrology study, didn't we?
I just want to quickly say to everyone you're listening to WGXC, we're sitting here with members of the South Bay Task Force, Tim O'Connor, Chris Reed, Michael O'Hara, and Patrick Doyle on the phone. You want to finish your point?
No, that was all. We've done a lot of research. We've done a lot of ecology. We've discovered new species, plants, animals. And we did a hydrology study, all from our boats, because it's private property, but the public is, our public rights to navigate through those waters precedes the property owner's rights.
So I guess we're running low on time. What would you like to see happen, and what do you think is possible? I don't know if those things are different.
Well, what I would like to see is that the U.S. Corps of Engineers would proceed with the $100,000 contaminant study that we have been working with them for over a year and a half and is now in the queue in Congress to hopefully be authorized.
And you say $100,000. It's a federally funded, so it's not costing the city money.
That's right. But by the way, remember that the taxpayers have been paying for all of this stuff, the LWRP, any of the renovations or things that go on in the waterfront. They may not be the people of the city of Hudson solely, but it's the state. The state taxpayers pay for this stuff, and the federal taxpayers. So this is all connected to all of us creating a stewardship. To me, the most important thing about this, all of the things that are going on, is that we really do step forward, do proper stewardship, make a good, hard look at what the possibilities are, which we have not done with this present document, and to actually do it correctly in that way. As far as making a new LWRP or a new vision, as Tim said, it's pretty much over. The vision is there. And if you want to call it myopic, I would. But the fact is that we've now got to go forward. And the only way to go forward is to examine what we actually have and have proper stewardship.
Which is what CEQA requires.
I just wanted to say a few more words about the Army Corps study. I think it's potentially very, very significant. I think it has the potential of being a historic turning point because it is establishing with a major federal agency a look not just at the contaminants historically there, which is what we initially understood that study to be about, but also about hydrology and about the movement of water and the relationship of the various parts that have been separated by various berms and other kinds of interruptions. And the thing is that this has been a win-win situation for Hudson. Despite all the controversy about the LWRP, of which we are a part inevitably, there's been a lot of unanimity in support of this study. There was a unanimous resolution by the Hudson Common Council. There was a joint letter of support by the mayor, Richard Scalera, and the Common Council President Don Moore, and Scenic Hudson, Friends of Hudson, South Bay Task Force, and the Hudson Business Coalition have all signed on.
Who's standing in the way then?
Nobody except the vagaries of the congressional process, which...
So is that the Chris Gibson staff?
I wouldn't say that. I think he could potentially...
Gillibrand and Schumer are working on it too, right?
They are taking the lead right now because it's starting on the Senate side, but I think that it has so many arguments on so many levels that I think that Gibson's office will come on board on this.
They're very supportive.
And we've been in contact with
them. Is it more of a problem in Congress that they don't want to spend any money on anything new at all?
No, it just takes a long time for these things to get through.
So the point was to get it into the queue because this is, again, I want to stress how we have to think long term here. The problems of the South Bay were many decades in the making. They're going to take many decades to undo. We're willing to kind of hang in there to push in whatever way we can, but I just want to alert the listeners that this is a very promising development for the city, and we're going to stay on top of this.
Tom, did you think that Congress was in a hurry to do anything?
and in parallel to that, we also, and there is, you can go on our website to look at the Corps of Engineers study that they made of the South Bay in relationship to a FEMA study which was initiated from the flooding that took place in 2007. So the fact is that there's two things that are being looked at in the South Bay as a direct result of the South Bay Task Force, because we have been the point people on this. Now, I'm not bragging. What I'm saying is that really it's too bad the city is not interested in these things. But the citizens are, and we have been doing this. So the FEMA study is a whole separate issue or a separate thing that's going on with the Corps of Engineers, which they've officially published this study of the South Bay, not study, it's actually a report of some findings, and that was, of course, that was something that we helped them on.
None of this is mentioned in the LWRP or the GEIS, none of it.
And these are real things. You can go to our website and look at them. So what is going on here? I think that question that Tim said is really really a good one. What is going on? How is this really going forth in a way that serves our community in the greatest possible reach? And are we actually, is the lead agency, the Common Council, are they actually doing their job in dealing with the biggest picture possible? Have they taken the hard look? And I can tell you, from my point of view, and I think from the task force point of view, the answer is no. The hard look has not been done. Proof's in the pudding. Look at it.
So would you all like them to approve the LW as it is? Would you like them to revisit? You want them to fix it and start over from the beginning, or just hold some additional public hearings?
Well, no, you can't really ask for those things because they're not in the procedure.
So how would you like it to play out?
Well, we don't agree on everything in the task force, and one of the things I'm really adamant about, and people are going to shrink from me right now, is I think that the Common Council has been derelict in their duties. And everybody's writhing right now, but that's my feeling. And CECRA is the state law, the act, that protects us from them in the end. We need protection from them at this point. So it really has gotten very desperate. They should have taken everyone's interests into account. They did not. It was not a dialogue, it was a monologue. So that's what we're stuck with. If they want to show an interest at this point, that's up to them. It's voluntary.
And again, this kind of whole thing about, well, there was 50 of these shareholder meetings and 6 of these workshops and all of that, those were only things that were one way. It was, okay, we're going to listen, take this stuff in. In terms of actual workshops, problem solving, and task forces, the only official task force created by the Common Council was a secret task force to do negotiations with St. Lawrence. That is the truth. And there has been no other task force relating to problems. And what was the result of that? Over a third of the GEIS in the documents are dedicated to the special interests of the corporation of Holcim, which of course has special interests. They own the property. I'm not denying that. What happened to the interest of the rest of the city? It's been dropped out. And I have to agree with them. I think that the Common Council is derelict in their duties. They're basically not looking at the full picture. They're not looking at the hard look, and it's too bad. But by golly, CECRA says one thing, and they're doing another.
Michael, you wanted to add one more thing. We're going to have to go in just a second.
Understood. I wanted to tie up a few different threads here because those of us who are in the task force have been in the weeds of all the details for several years now, and it's easy for us to talk about all of those details, but it's hard for the citizenry to understand that our main thrust here is to accomplish a win-win solution to all of these issues in one package. And I think that, and we all believe that that can be done. We can accomplish the basic issue of solving the environmental justice problem, getting the heavy gravel trucks off of the road. We can take those trucks or some other way of getting the stone from the quarry to the river. Satisfies the corporation's needs. And we can avoid doing very much harm to the aquatic nature of the South Bay. We can accomplish all of those things with what I suggest is the reestablishment of the Citizens Advisory Board, which had been a feature of the organization before, which will serve as a final editing function for the plan that will get all of those things in place using some of the methodologies that we've described in terms of the route of the traffic there, the other elements that we've talked about so far. Those all can be done with the appropriate will on the part of the people who control the process.
Michael, wait a minute. What are you talking about, the Citizen Advisory Board? There has never been a Citizen Advisory Board in the history of this thing. I was a part of the Waterfront Committee before that, which was under the mayor, not under the Common Council, and the LWRP has only had one committee, and it was not a working committee. It was not a citizens' committee. There has never been a citizens' advisory board, period.
Patrick, it's a matter of the nomenclature here. What I'm talking about is a process which will involve somebody other than the Common Council, which is really not equipped to work through a document like this of itself. It's not the sort of thing that a legislative body does. And whether we say that there were effective bodies like that in the past, I'm saying we need to put one in place right now, a task force, a committee, whatever we want to call it language-wise, but we need to put a group of people who care about this together to make a final advice which will include all of the parties that are concerned about this so that we can move this ahead as expeditiously as possible.
And do you think the city government would show any interest in that?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think certain parts of the city government who are in control of that are people that we have that I think we're going to get cooperation from fairly soon.
Well, I think we'll agree to disagree.
So that's it's a matter of an aspiration on my part. Whether it actually comes true, neither of us knows. But the
it's
point is that
never happened in the history of this city.
That's right.
To have a citizen, it's not ever happened, Michael.
Right.
I know it. I've been in the middle of it. It's never happened. If we actually had followed the dictates or the guidelines of the state in relationship to this thing, it would have been far different because it would have been consensus. It would have been consensus billing. They threw out the entire guideline of the state except for the very first page. It was thrown out.
And in the GEIS, they threw out the most important first step to involve the public, which was scoping.
All right. Well, we're past the 6 o'clock hour, and it wouldn't be Hudson if people that didn't agree on 99% of everything didn't have a little dispute about something. But that's Hudson. But why don't you guys give us the information about where you want to go for more information and what you want to look at stuff more about the South Bay Task Force, or where do you go?
Well, again, I would refer people, there's contact information as well. They can talk to us individually, but HudsonSouthBay.com is the website, and we are going to be adding more material pertinent to this process as we generate it. To make a final word about, you know, the history of non-cooperation, of course, is something we're all very familiar with, but I am one of the people who is kind of a glass half full person. I think that the aspiration is a very noble one, and it's one that we are and try to embody in our small way as a citizens advocacy group, the South Bay Task Force. And I think that could be a model for something larger and that is tied in with the city government. So
the most important thing to me is that when you go to our website, go to the photo tour, because that will link you to the photographs that Tim has taken. That will show you one of the most beautiful places on earth. And that's what everybody really needs to look at, no matter which side of this issue you're on.
Because you're not allowed to walk down there now?
Well, we're only allowed to boat in there.
Most people don't even know it's even there. It's just, you don't understand how much life there is until you look at these photographs.
Take your boats to the South Bay.
All right, well, we've got some fellas with their tube amps all revved up and ready to go here, ready to play. Antoine, who's going to play in a second?
Nature Films. It's Lewis Monroe and Pat.
Well, we want to thank the South Bay Task Force for coming in and talking LRWP and GEIS and Hudson Waterfront and all kinds of other SEQR acronyms today on WGXC, another acronym there. But I'm going to turn things back over to Antoine, and we're going to bring up the band in just a second.
Thanks,
thank you
guys.
All.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.